What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folk. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Being diagnosed with a chronic condition, illness, or disability significantly impacts one's life. The families may be thrown into a crisis. Rachel Brown experienced a myriad of struggles in her life. She and her twin brother were born 12 weeks premature. After their 8-week stay in the NICU at Phoenix Children's Hospital, Dr. James O'Neill, pediatric ophthalmologist, discovered an aggressive case of retinopathy of prematurity. The vision in Rachel's right eye was saved, but the retina in the left eye had already detached, causing it to go completely blind. The glaucoma began to disfigure the eye. Rachel endured severe teasing and bullying. Rachel, now a singer, songwriter, and advocate for early detection of vision problems in young children, shares her challenges and successes with 411 Teen. Rachel, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. How old were you when you first became aware of your disability?
Well, in elementary school, I always had to wear glasses, and I still do. And every time we would go in, the nurse for some vision screenings, I knew that I always underperformed in that. And I had been seeing an eye doctor ever since I can remember. And it wasn't until about I entered my freshman year in high school when the glaucoma in my left eye started to disfigure it. And people would start to notice, and it started to become a little painful. And people would always ask me, oh, what's wrong with your eye? And so I never thought it was a huge problem, even though I was very aware of it until high school definitely started.
How was your condition explained to you? I mean, how did those adults in your life talk about it? What was the explanation?
Well, whenever I would go in to see Dr. O'Neill every year for my eye exams, he was always just very matter-of-fact and never really kept anything from me. And I always understood it. I've been very aware and smart with this whole process. And anytime there was a problem, he would address it to me, and I was never scared or freaking out, and mm-hmm. he was very calm about it. And so I definitely thank him for that because he made that process very easy.
What do you remember about your early experience?
Well, I do remember that I also had a cataract in my right eye. And when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I had to have that removed. And the minute that happened, I could not believe all of the clarity that was in my world now. It was like a whole entire new world had opened up in front of me, and I had gone my whole life thinking that what I was seeing was normal. And so mm-hmm. when I had that surgery, it was an amazing moment, and I always will remember that.
Oh, wow. I bet it was. It's like seeing that there are leaves on trees, huh?
Definitely. That was crazy.
What was the general attitude amongst your family members concerning your vision limitations?
Well, we always knew that this would be a part of my life, and we always just treated it like it was nothing that would slow me down. And, you know, we would always take care of the things that we needed to, and anytime I had to go into surgery, my parents never were really worried about it. I was never scared. We just always knew that we would definitely get through it, and we always did. So definitely thankful to have a great family and just a positive attitude always surrounding it.
Now, you have a twin brother. Did he experience the similar difficulties?
Oh, I love my twin brother. He actually turned out completely fine in vision. and he's just great. I love Kyle is his name.
Well, that's good. That's great. As a small child, how did your peers interact with you?
Well, I was always a very outgoing child in elementary school. I've always done theater, and so I always just loved being around people. And I never thought anything was ever wrong with me. And whenever there were times when someone would mention, oh, like, what's wrong with your eye, or why does it look different, it would kind of shock me because I didn't ever think anything of it. But I was kind of just sort of used to it. And then I just started to get older and I started to care more about what people thought. I got a little more self-conscious. So it definitely kind of progressed over the years. But usually people have never really paid horrible attention to it. So I'm very grateful for that, too.
What limitations did your vision issues create in your life?
Well, definitely in school, I would always have to be that kid in the front row, always having to see the board really close. And so my teachers were always aware of that. And it was just something that I would just have to let people know about. If I ever needed any extra help with anything, I wasn't ashamed to be like, hey, I have limited vision problems, and, you know, any accommodations that you can make are greatly appreciated. So, yeah.
What kind of accommodations were made in school?
Well, like I said, all of the my mom would always email teachers in the beginning of a school year, and they would all know that I would have to be put up front, and so I could see better and everything, and just definite stuff like that. And with reading, like, I've always been in honors reading and everything, so that's really cool. And it was just always, yeah, I mean, mainly the big thing was just school.
Okay, so the biggest accommodations, and I guess the biggest changes that you experienced were in the school environment.
Yes.
Okay. Compare that to the community. How did that differ? Because it sounds like just in your everyday neighborhood community, maybe you didn't experience the same degree of difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in school and as you tend to get older, people start to, like, judge more. You become more aware of what people are thinking of you. So, I mean, when I was younger, I would always just be like, yeah, I have to go up front, like, whatever. But then as it started to get the years go by, I would kind of feel a little bit awkward if I had to ask, oh, can I go up to the front so I can see better? And I didn't want to be thought of, like, that weird girl who has vision problems, you know? So.
As far as your parents were concerned, it sounds like they were not particularly sheltering and protective, and that they encouraged your exposure to the world around you.
Right. I mean, they knew that they didn't want my vision problems to stop me. And, I mean, of course, they were always like, no, can't be playing sports. I had to be very careful with the safety in my eyes and everything. But that's fine, because I never really wanted to play sports or do any kind of physical activities anyway. But so I'm very lucky that my parents have always been lovely and just very supportive in everything and all of that.
Now, as far as accommodations were concerned, with the exception of sitting in the front of the class so that you could see the board easier, were there any other necessary accommodations? I mean, were you in a vision impaired class? Anything else like that?
You know, I was never really treated any differently in that respect, other than I would just, you know, have to go up front to see better. I always just definitely pushed myself to just be like a normal kid and just be in that same environment. So that's always, I'm very lucky for that. I never had to be in a special class for that kind of stuff.
Well, you talk about the severe teasing and bullying that you experienced. When did this start? When can you remember it occurring?
I would say that was definitely probably like eighth grade, freshman year, and sophomore year, all of that, because that is when it started to be a noticeable physical difference in my eye. And I was very, very self-conscious of it. I would always had my bangs really long to cover it and all of that. I was very, like, I didn't want to draw attention to it at all. And so I wanted to do anything I could to hide it because people were starting to ask questions and I didn't really know how to explain it to them. It was kind of weird for me because I didn't really think it was a big deal, but apparently they did. So it was just a new experience when people started to actually notice that something was wrong.
Well, and I noticed you say notice when people were able to recognize. So it sounds like as long as they weren't able to recognize that you had a disability, as long as it was not visual, that they didn't really respond to your poor vision.
Exactly. Yeah. I have never let it slow me down in my life at all. And so, you know, I've always just tried to lead a very, very normal life, and I have been able to, so that's been awesome. It's been because, you know, I did theater and dance and all of that stuff, and so I could do all the things that I want to do, so I was very happy about that, and it's just been in the past couple of years when I've had to have all of the major surgeries and changes made, but I've been adapting really well, and my friends are all great about it now, so it's awesome.
So would you say that you think people respond differently when they can see the actual disability as opposed to...
Yes, I would definitely say so.
Okay. In what way do you think the response changes?
Well, because, you know, if it's a physical attribute that you can see in someone, and if they can point that out in you, it'll make them sort of feel better about themselves because they don't have that to worry about. So I feel like definitely with any physical kind of disability, people are more likely to point that out because it's an obvious thing to the world. Or if your disability affects how you act, people will also attack that. But in my case, it never affected how I acted. It was just always a physical thing. So as a teenager, people want to call you out on that.
How did you, in the school milieu, do you feel like teachers, administrators were aware of what you were experiencing?
You know, I don't think to the fullest extent. I mean, when I was in elementary school, middle school, my mom would definitely email them and let them know. But when I got into high school, it was kind of like, well, I can handle it by myself. And then it was kind of like a shock when I let teachers know it. Whenever I had to let teachers know what was going on, it was kind of like, oh, really? You have vision problems? And so, you know, I just have definitely adapted as I've gotten older and made, like, the choices and changes myself that I need to do.
What about the severe bullying and the teasing? Were powers that be, teachers, administrators, were they aware of this?
No, I would not say that they were.
Okay.
It was definitely just more of a subtle, like, little jabs here and there at me, and I would go home and I would let it affect me. I definitely let things affect me and what people say. So when all of that was going on, it was definitely more of like a very internal thing that wasn't as obvious, but I'm very glad that I got through it and everything is definitely okay today.
Well, when you say, for those who may be listening, who may have similar disabilities, similar pressures, when you say it affected you, when you went home, it would affect you. In what way? I mean, what happened? Can you share what you mean by it affected you?
Well, because when people would tell me that there was something different about me and think that it was wrong, I'm like, well, that's something I can't change about myself. And so I would go home being like, wow, well, what can I do to make them not think that anymore? Like, I can't. And so I knew that it wasn't necessarily something wrong with me, but I would still wish that I could change it, and I wish that I could be accepted. And so I just let it play a bunch of mind games with me, and it just got really, like, not fun to go home and just think that there was something wrong with you that you couldn't change about yourself.
So when you were going home, you would just kind of internalize it and kind of go over it and over it and over it, perseverate on it possibly, and... How did it impact the way that you interacted with others in your household?
I mean, not in my household for sure. I mean, I would always go to my mom sometimes. I'd be upset. I'd be like, Mom, I really just wish it wasn't like this. And there were definitely times when I was very upset that I had the situation I had. But I was very thankful when we found a solution. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in my heart. And so that would always get me through, too, is I just know, no, there is something so much better, and it's going to get better. And I know that. And so that would always get me through for sure.
Well, what was the advice that your parents shared with you when you were going through your changes and trying to cope with this?
Well, they would always let me know that high school and all these kids that you might be interacting through throughout your school life, they're not going to last forever. This isn't going to last forever. And you might not even see them once you're not in school anymore. And most of the time, the reason that they're making fun of you is because they feel bad about themselves. And so you have to look at it a different way. You can't think that, oh, they don't like me. You can think, oh, well, they don't like themselves. And you can even think, how can I help that to make them not hate themselves? Because, you know, you should go through life just liking everything about yourself. And that's what my parents would let me know. Like, no, Rachel, you were made perfectly the way you are. And there's a reason for all of that. And you don't need to feel ashamed of anything about who you are.
When you think back on the adjustments and the changes that you had to make, how did it, at that time, impact your life?
Well, the definite changes that I had to make were I would, sometimes it was physical, like, oh, well, how can I fix my hair today to cover this up? But when it came to the time where I had to have surgery to remove my left eye and have a prosthetic artificial eye be put in, I was never really scared because I knew Dr. O'Neill had told me years before that that would probably have to happen. And so when the time came for it to actually happen, I was prepared, but it took me a while to sort of wrap my head around it. And when it got closer and closer, I started to get a little bit nervous, but I knew that it was definitely what I needed and that as soon as it happened, it would be less painful, and I would be able to start looking normal, which wasn't my first expectation for it. I didn't really care about that, but it was definitely a plus. I was just excited there would be no more pain and that I could just have a solution that would make my life easier, and it was simple, and I trusted the doctors, and it was a very easy process, and so I'm very thankful for that.
Okay, Rachel, hold your thoughts. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we will return in 60 seconds. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly conversation with teens about issues and events that impact their daily lives. Rachel Brown's blind eye never looked normal. Over the years, she endured fellow classmates and other people teasing her about her eye. She became a victim to bullying. She talks about her story behind being blind. The family played a pivotal role in coping with the illness and disability. Rachel, it sounds like your family was really significant when it comes to your being able to move forward and to handle your disability.
Definitely they were.
And what was the attitude in your overall community?
Well, it was always you know, very positive, and we're very optimistic. And I knew I could always just go to my mom with anything that I was having trouble with, and my brother was always very supportive, and he genuinely cared, and he would always give me the biggest hugs if I was ever nervous or worried or upset about anything. He's so great. And so I always had a great community of family and aunts and uncles who just, I got nothing but love from my dad and everybody. So I love my family that I have, because I've always been in that optimistic, very positive, loving environment my whole life.
And it certainly reflects. I mean, it's made your experience very endurable, and you have persevered.
Yes, for sure.
As you think about the development and the changes that you had to overcome, what was the most challenging part of growing up, and why was it?
I would say, honestly, the most difficult part has been within the past year when I have had my the new prosthetic eye, because it, you know, it's a new foreign thing that you are having in your body, and it's kind of weird to adapt to. And I was still a little bit self-conscious, thinking, oh, well, is it going to move correctly? Are people going to know that it's artificial? And so there was still that little bit of lack of self-confidence that I had. But after a few months of me getting comfortable with it, and then I went back to school after the summer, and no one seemed to notice, and it was great, and I never got any more comments about my eye looking weird, and it has just been one of the best things.
With this, would you share with the listening audience just the process and the procedure to getting this prosthetic eye?
Well, it was about 8 months before the actual surgery is when I learned that I had to have it done. And so we made that appointment. We made all of the notices to the doctors and everything. And then the time came. It was in April of 2012. And I went in. It was a very quick surgery, and it was pretty painless for that day. And then I had to miss school for about a week, which was actually very surprising, because I healed remarkably well for this kind of operation, my doctor told me. And, you know, it was actually very relatively painless for me too, which I was also very lucky. So I know there was a bunch of prayers going out. So I'm definitely very blessed to have that kind of love in my life. So I was very lucky that it was very painless and it went very quick. And then I actually had to have my eye stitched closed for a few weeks. And then over the summer, I got to be fitted for the eye, which was a very weird experience.
Share that with us. Would you share the process for the listening audience so they have an idea of exactly what you were experiencing?
Okay. Well, I went in to the office for my doctor, and he put this mold on my eye, and it felt really, he had to numb it first, and so it felt kind of weird in the first place. And then he put this gel stuff in it that would make the shape that my eye had to be. And it felt really weird, and it wasn't really uncomfortable. It was just funny. And that didn't take very long. And then a couple weeks later, I went in and I actually got to see him paint the eye itself, which was a very cool experience, because I sat there for maybe 3 hours. He just looked at my eye and painted it perfectly. Like, I cannot even tell a difference in the color. He is amazing. His name is Dr. Hadlock and Dr. John Hadlock. And he is an amazing artist. And he was wonderful. He made me feel comfortable throughout the whole experience, and it was great.
So now you've just had this eye for what, a year now?
Yes, it's almost a year and a half now.
Okay. You mentioned that the bullying and teasing increased when you were in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think overall, though, that bullying, because we hear so much about it now, it's in the media,
definitely,
we're always talking about it. Do you think the incidence of bullying is increasing?
I definitely think so. With social media and everything, it's just so much more accessible. And people just don't think about what they say anymore. We've become so desensitized to people's feelings. And I think that's horrible, because everybody has a soul and everybody has a heart that just wants to be loved. And when you think about your own self, like, would you really want someone to say that to you? And people just don't think about that. And they just are in it for their own self-interest. And we just need to think about others and just be able to love everybody and just be positive, because the world is a great place and we just aren't realizing it. But it can be full of love and positivity if you just want to and reach out and just be nice to people. It's not that hard to just say a kind word or give a compliment to someone you don't even know. It can make their day.
Well, when you think about this desensitivity, where do you think it is coming from? What fuels it? Because that seems to be the case across the board. We talk about a lack of desensitivity when it comes to respect for human life. It seems like altercations end in death. Whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you may have had an altercation with someone. It may have been about words. It may have even, you know, traded some punches. But now you lose your life. What, from your perspective, is influencing this desensitivity?
No, I definitely think it's the media, and I'm not quite sure when it all even started. All I know is that it has just become such a big problem, and it's just the things that we see on TV and the music that we hear, it's all just sort of empty, and there's no real substance or like meaning to what's being said anymore. And I think that's weird, because if you're spending most of your time on the internet or watching TV or listening to music, you should be wanting to fill your head with things that will make sense and just have a meaning to it. And, you know, and so I think it's a very sad problem that's going on. And so, you know, I definitely feel like if you are an artist or if you're part of that media that's going on, you should be wanting to make that positive impact.
Obviously, music has played a major role in your just coping and on a just an everyday basis. When did you start songwriting?
When I was 11 years old, actually. I remember that distinctly. It is probably the best thing I've ever learned how to do.
Was songwriting, I'm wondering if you found songwriting as being possibly therapeutic, offering you an avenue to express your feelings that maybe you would not have been able to do in another medium.
Oh, yes. I mean, for me, I loved it, because if I had things bottled up inside and if I just didn't really know what to say to someone, or if I was too afraid to say something to someone, I could just write it in the song, and I can say exactly what I wanted to say, and I may not even ever have to show the person that song, but I can just know that I have gotten it out in some form. And just everybody needs some kind of escape or some mechanism that they can get all of that out in, whether that be songwriting, whether it be painting, whether it be sports, or just anything. You need to have that outlet, and that has definitely been songwriting for me.
How do you write? I mean, where does the inspiration come?
I mean, I would say I just love observing, because if it's not in a situation that has happened to me personally with a different person, I'll observe people around me. What I like to do is I just love listening to people, and I love listening to conversations and the way people interact with each other. I think it's fascinating. And so I base a lot of things off of that, and it's just all about just our human condition and who we are as people, and just the love that we can receive and give, and all these different emotions. You can explore that in so many different ways with songwriting and in art and just whatever you want to do. It's crazy and it's awesome.
Where does your inspiration just comes from your environment, your milieu?
Definitely.
You know, whatever is happening, and that may in turn inspire you to write.
Mm-hmm. Inspiration is definitely everywhere.
Okay. Talk about then the song you wrote, What I See. I know that is a key song for you.
Yes, it is honestly one of my favorite songs I've written, because it's one that means the most to me. Because, you know, you can write songs about boys and relationships, and that's all great, and it can mean something to you. But with What I See, I sat down to write that for a fundraiser that I performed at for Vision Quest 2020. And I was super excited, because I knew that it would mean so much to not only me, but to everybody who's involved and to all these different kids who may be going through the same thing I have, or even something more severe than I have. And so when I wrote it, I just thought about, like, not only what you see physically, but what you can see with your heart. Because even if you have all these visual disabilities, you can see the world around you just simply by feeling and just being a part of life. And so that's definitely where the inspiration for the chorus comes from, because you can see someone's strength and just the way that they are. You can see someone's love and just their spirit about them, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
everybody has that special aura about them, and that's what you can just see because you can feel it. So that's definitely one of the focuses of the songs. And then just talking about that actual visual clarity, how special that is for kids who have never seen that before.
Would you share some of the lyrics with us, if you don't mind?
Yes, the chorus is, "I see the beautiful and strong person you're going to be." So that's definitely what I mean by just, you can see a person's potential in all of that. And then in other verses of the songs, it talks about, like, where you just feel like you're giving up, but you don't need to, because you know, you see their future. You see that awesome potential that they have. And then in the bridge, I am talking about just open your eyes and just see all around the world that is here around you, you know? And, like, whether that is just with your heart or with your eyes, the world around us is beautiful if you just stop to just take a moment and reflect on it.
How do you get people to see in that manner, taking it to another level? Because I think we're so very basic and concrete here. You know, we've lost the sensitivity. We don't have a real appreciation for aesthetics. And that's what you're talking about. You're really mm-hmm. talking about being able to take your life, to take your existence, to take your experiences and your perceptions to a different level. And
yes.
what I'm wondering is if you have some insights as to how we get individuals, whether they're teens or not, to that point. I mean, you got there and you had a number of struggles. You had a number of struggles and strife to get there. How do we get, you know, folks to that point?
You know, I think it is definitely just a matter of, you sometimes just need to slow down, take a moment, and it's okay to take maybe 5 minutes out of your day with whatever you're doing and just focus on how you are actually doing. You don't need to think about all the things that you need to get done. You just need to take a step back and think, how am I doing right now? Am I okay? Am I putting too much on my plate? And it's a matter of, you can take a few minutes to be calm and just think about yourself and just sit in quiet for a second and just, you know, reflect on everything that's going on and just know in your heart and your mind that things are going to get better if they're not totally awesome right now. And if you're really loving life where you're at, take a moment and just be thankful for what you have and just, you know, just take a moment and just be quiet and still. It's a very hard thing to do, but
mm-hmm.
if you know how to do it and if you take the time to want to do it, you can just find that peace.
And that's what I'm asking you. Do you have any suggestions for that person who may not be there, but who may want to get there, okay, who may want to be where you are, and they're striving, that teen who may have some type of disability or some type mm-hmm. of challenge, how do they get there, you know? What do they do? I mean, because you have grasped it, you have conquered it, and I think that your success could be shared with many. What I'm going to ask you to do, though, is to mm-hmm. hold your thoughts, okay? And when we come back, we'll address that particular question.
Okay.
To my listening audience, you are listening to 411 Teen, and I have Rachel Brown, who has suffered many struggles and has really soared. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm having a very informative, insightful conversation with Rachel Brown, who is truly a unique young woman. Rachel, 411 Teen applauds you for all that you have overcome. In addition, you are an advocate for early detection of vision problems in young children through an organization called Vision Quest 2020. Before we went on break, I had to interrupt you when you were telling us or sharing with us maybe some of the things that can help people get to a point where you are.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. When it comes to just being comfortable and just being at peace with yourself and taking that time to be still and just reflect, it's not necessarily a step-by-step process because, you know, it's tailored differently to every person. You have your own different things that can make you feel at peace. And I know for me, that has always been, you know, songwriting, and it has been prayer even. That's my big thing. And I just find peace in the fact that, you know, all of that. And whether you are a songwriter or whether you just love the people around you, whether you know you have good friends, you can just always take a moment and just, if you don't know where to start, think about all the people in your life who love you. And if you don't think there's anybody, I promise you there is always there are always people who love you and who want to be a part of your life, and you never have to feel alone. And that is just the one big thing, if you just don't know where to start, is definitely just think about all the people you can surround yourself with and who do want to love on you, because there's always a chance.
Okay. I know that you're a big advocate for children who have vision problems and early identification. You support the nonprofit organization Division Quest 2020. Would you share with us, give us some history about this organization, Vision Quest 2020?
Vision Quest 2020 is amazing. It was started by my eye doctor, Dr. O'Neill, Dr. James O'Neill, with his partner, Richard Terendi, who is an entrepreneur. And the two of them got together, and they were very upset about all of the numbers of kids who were just coming in, and it was too late to save their vision because they didn't even know they had a problem. And they knew there was something they could do to just help detect these early vision problems so that kids can have that clarity in their life and they can go throughout life seeing the world exactly how it is. And so what they did is they created a video game called I Spy 2020, which is an amazing way to detect early vision problems that a normal school eye chart can't usually detect. And so with that technology that they have developed, it has already helped so many kids in different schools, and their vision is to get this in schools all across the country and hopefully throughout the world, so that all these children can have that chance to have that clarity in their life and see the world exactly how they're supposed to, and that they won't have to live with all of these vision problems throughout their life, because most of the time they can be very easily detected if treated early.
Have you played the game?
I have not, actually. But you know what? I'm going in to see Dr. O'Neill next month, and I just might have to ask him to play it.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Now, if someone wanted to access that Vision Quest 2020, do you know where would they go or how they could contact?
Well, on Facebook, you can definitely search for Vision Quest 2020. And that, you know, Vision Quest is one word and 2020. And they have all the links to their website and Twitter and stuff on there. So that's definitely a very resourceful place. It gives you updates all the time. And if you want to know more about that, that's definitely the place to go.
And what about your songwriting? Is there a place where they can connect with that?
Well, you can also go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/RachelBrownOfficial. And I also have a website, rachelbrownofficial.com. And I have links to my Twitter and YouTube and all of that on there. And I can also keep you updated on the new shows I'm playing and all that fun stuff going on. So definitely check out my page and for sure go to Vision Quest 2020, please.
Okay. What are you doing now? Where are you now? What's happening? You are attending a conference?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I am at a Western Region Leadership Conference right now, actually, with my school's DECA chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to be a weekend full of all these workshops about leadership and just careers and all this fun stuff. And I'm super excited to learn more about the business side of maybe what I want to apply to my own music and whatnot.
So that is something that I see that you plan to continue.
For sure.
Okay. Many people are confronted with various struggles and difficulties and disabilities in their lives. When it occurs, it's always difficult, but it may be even more difficult when they're in that middle school, high school, that period where you start to be aware of yourself.
Yeah.
What would you say to those individuals who may be in similar situations and confronting the adversity, the acrimony, the negative vibes? What would you say to that individual?
I would definitely just say it is a lot about surrounding yourself with good people in your life. Because I know in my middle school experience and all of that, when all of that teasing and bullying was going on, a lot of the times it was because I had people in my life who I thought were good for me, but they weren't actually, and they were bringing me down. And sometimes that's a hard thing to realize, but you just have to know, are these people really loving on me? Are they truly caring about my well-being? And do we help each other to be better people? And if you have those right people in your life, you can go to them and they'll give you encouragement through all of the torment that you think you're going through and all of the sadness and things that have been going on in your life, because there's always someone who's willing to help you and make you feel better. And it's a great thing when you have that solid foundation of people who you can always rely on.
And as you look back on this solid foundation that you obviously had, and you think about the school, how can the school, because young folks spend a major amount of their time in school, more so than they do even at home with family, especially their waking hours. What can the school do? How can teachers, administrators, nurses, whomever, be helpful in helping in aiding this individual, whatever their difficulty may be, in just handling effectively what they're going through? If you think about things that the school might do.
Well, I know most schools nowadays have that anti-bully policy, but most of the time it's not always carried through like you think it should be, especially in middle school. I know my middle school had an anti-bully policy, and I don't know how effective it is now, but when you have a policy like that, you should definitely stick to it. Don't just be a teacher who, when you hear a rude comment being made, and even if you don't know how that kid is reacting, if you hear a rude comment or a comment that could upset someone, you should confront that right away and not just let it slide, because you don't know who could be affected by that or how they can be affected by things that people say. And we just, teachers and just students especially, just need to be aware, and they can't be afraid to speak up if they're uncomfortable with something. Because I think a lot of the times, especially in high school, when you hear something being said, you don't want to confront that person because you're afraid of being seen as that weird person or that person who is standing up for someone, and that might not be socially acceptable. But it's more socially acceptable to help people and to be that light in someone's life, I think. And that is much better than standing by, because you don't know what that last straw in that person's mind can be. So it's always better to speak up when you're hearing something that makes you uncomfortable, or if you see someone being upset, just go and ask them if there's anything you can do to help, and just be that loving hand, because I know that everybody just wants that in their life, so you can be that to someone too.
You know, bullying can often be so debilitating. It can be just really, really very hurtful. How did you handle that, or how would you suggest someone who is the victim of bullying, who is experiencing it day in and day out? Do you have any insights as to how they may handle it, given your experiences?
Yes. Well, I definitely think a lot of the times people are scared to open up about their situations that have been going on or anything that's been happening to them in terms of bullying because they don't want them to get hurt even more. Mm-hmm. But you should never be afraid to speak up. If something is bothering you and if someone is hurting you, you need to tell someone because, like I've been saying, someone does want to help you. And so you have to get over that fear of being looked at and differently and just being like treated mm-hmm. differently because, you know, people do want to help you. And if you're being bullied, you shouldn't be afraid. You need to get the help that you want because you don't want to have that torment going on in your life forever. And the quicker that someone can come and love on you and help you, the better their situation will be. And so that's definitely my advice is you don't need to be afraid to talk to someone, to talk to anybody who you think will be willing to listen.
Do you think the American culture, youth culture particularly, is obsessed with perfection, is upset with external presentation?
Yes, I definitely think it is. I will even admit it myself that I get so over analytical a bunch of the times. And, you know, our society nowadays puts so much pressure on being perfect. Mm-hmm. But that definition of perfect, like, who set that definition, you know? Like, there is no one definition of perfect because you can be perfect in your own eyes. You just have to love everything about yourself. You can be perfect in your best friend's eyes, your family's eyes, because there is no one definition of perfect. And you don't need to strive for that because it doesn't really exist. You just have to be happy with yourself. And that is perfection, in my opinion, is when you are just fully happy and content with who you are in your life. Mm-hmm. You don't need to focus on anybody else but yourself.
And that's very valuable information, you know, to understand and feel good about oneself. But sometimes it's very hard when you are the blunt of a lot of criticism and teasing, mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, you know, you have soared. I wonder about those individuals who really are having an extremely difficult time handling, you know, the bullying, handling the ostracism.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions?
Well, I definitely think you don't need to be taking it out on yourself. You mm-hmm. don't need to be thinking that you are worthless because of what someone has said about you. And I know that is totally easier mm-hmm. said than done because I definitely let things that people say get to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely still working on that. But it has just become easier and easier as I've gotten older and as I've just learned more things. And it's like you'll get to a point where you just know that you are enough and you are so enough because at the end of the day, you are living with yourself and you just need to know that you are made perfectly how you are supposed to be. And I just find comfort in that, that I know I am exactly where I need to be in this mm-hmm. moment, that anything that is going on right now is for a reason and that things will get better and my life is going to turn out exactly how it's supposed to be. And once you wrap your head around that, there is so much peace in that, and I love it.
Well, it sounds like maturity has played a major role in mm-hmm. your being able to soar, because you said as you get each year, it gets easier and you start to feel better and better about self. So would you mm-hmm. agree that maturity is important when it comes to that and that it's going to get better, you know?
Yeah, and I definitely think kids nowadays are forced to grow up sooner than every generation. It's, mm-hmm. you always hear that, like, parents will say, I never had to deal with that as a kid. And when my generation has our kids, we're going to think that we never had to deal with those situations. So it gets younger and younger, the age that you have to really start maturing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when you have to mature and stuff, you are ready and that you can deal with it because, you know, as humans, we're built to adapt. We know how to deal with our situations and it's just, you know, you mm-hmm. at the end of the day are your own best friend and
good
you
point.
Can grow up with yourself and mm-hmm. you can grow up with the awesome, loving people around you And I definitely still think the biggest part of maturity is definitely surrounding yourself with good people and people that are going to bring you up. And when you mature, you realize those people who are there for you and the people who are not. So that's also definitely a good thing.
What have you learned about self through all of this?
Well, I have definitely learned that I am going to make mistakes, and that's okay because we are human and we do that. And so I have just learned that I can't be beating myself up about every little thing that someone says about me or any difficulty that I'm going through, that it's necessarily not your fault and you don't have to blame yourself. And like with myself, I am becoming more and more comfortable with myself every single day. It's just a part of living, because the more that you live with yourself, the more you learn to actually like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, once I realized that and the fact that I can learn to love myself, it has just turned out perfectly, and I love it.
In this last minute or so, is there any particular philosophy that you would share just about life?
Well, for me, I have always been a person of faith, and whenever I think I can't get through something, I always just know in my mind that there is just a greater purpose in my life and that I am not here living for myself. We are here to make a difference in the world, and we are here to touch people's lives, and it is an incredible thing that we can do as people, and you just have to have that faith in your heart that you can get through it and that you do matter and you deserve to be here.
Well, Rachel Brown, 411 Teen salutes you. You know, thanks so much for sharing your experiences and your words of wisdom with our listening audience. And to my listening audience, thank you so much. And to my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.